Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I'm Erica Adler, shareholder at Retzel and Andrus and leader of our healthcare practice. Today, I'm joined by David Adler, who is the founder and owner of the Adler Law Group. And David is an IP lawyer, and we're really excited to have him here today because we're going to be talking about common mistakes that practices make when either starting or marketing their brand. And I know that's kind of a mouthful, but this is an issue that comes up pretty often with practices that either are just starting out, or maybe they've come up with a clever new name, tagline, logo, and they either don't do their research before they get started and they end up quite disappointed after investing quite a lot in it, or they make some other mistakes along the way. So today we have David here and he's going to talk to us about it. And thanks for joining us, David.
Well, hi. Thanks for having me, Erica. It's an honor to be here with you. So let's start with sort of the biggest mistake that I see when any company is doing some branding or marketing, and it's basically ready, shoot, aim, right? So they get very excited about having a new brand or a new identity, a new logo, a new slogan. They spend a lot of money, they get it all teed up, and then they go out to the market and they start, you know, they do an email blast and they create a new website. And then lo and behold, a few months down the road, they realize either somebody else is already using a similar name, or worse yet, somebody tells them to stop using the name that they've just chosen. So it's a problem that happens a lot, but it's also a problem that's easy to avoid. And so what I like to do is kind of go through a couple different things with my clients. And a couple of things that we'll talk about today are, number one, just how do you choose a good brand, right? How do you choose something that's protectable, that's going to resonate with your customers, that's going to be memorable, and that's going to really help you kind of stand out in the marketplace, right? There are certain legal requirements we want to look at to make sure we get a good brand. The second thing we're going to look at is, now that we've kind of selected a good slogan or word or whatever, how do we know it's available to use? And how do we make sure we're not stepping on anybody else's toes, right? And so once we know that, then we can talk a little bit about what happens in the marketplace when you're actually using your brand. What happens if you find somebody else who's copying what you're doing or who you think is using your trademark, or vice versa? What happens if you're using something, even though you've cleared it and you're pretty sure it's available, but what happens when you get that cease and desist letter and somebody says, you know, stop using that and pay us, you know, $10,000. So those are all kind of like the big things that I see in my practice and that I want to talk about today.
All right, great. Well, let's start with the first step then, which is somebody wants to form a new entity. They've chosen a name for their practice or logo. And I'll just mention that practices will often come to me and they'll think they have come up with something very creative. And I, just by doing a Google search, I can tell that, you know, there's other practices with the same name. And I'll say, well, are you sure? You know, I see other practices with the same name. Do you maybe want to, you know, hire somebody or have a lawyer kind of look through the trademark database or do some research? I mean, that's a little bit outside what I do. And, you know, often they just ignore me, or they say, we feel confident in this name, or they may say they use the marketing company and they, you know, somehow expected the marketing company to have done that for them. So I think this is a very common issue.
Yeah, it is. So I think, it, you know, just at the very beginning, you have to kind of think about, How protectable is my name? Is this a word that's sort of generic, like, you know, surgery associates, right, for a surgery practice? Or is it something that's a little bit more distinctive or more unique? And the more distinctive, the more unique, the more different you can make your name sound, the better you are. But of course, you know, you raise a really good question. Maybe the name is available in a state database. Maybe the name is available on a Google search, or maybe you do a Google search and you get some mixed results back. Like, you get some people with the names that sort of sound similar, but maybe they're doing something different than you are. And, you know, maybe you go to the website and it's a broken link. And, you know, maybe there's like an old, you know, Facebook account, but it doesn't look like anybody's done anything in a while, right? So all those things are relevant to whether you can use it. But unfortunately, none of them are really sort of the definitive question to answer. And I think what you mentioned going to an experienced trademark lawyer, right? And so just like other lawyers and most people out there, we use Google. You know, I use Google, I use the state name databases, and it's always a great place to start. But really, you also have to check the state and federal trademark databases. So, and even then, you know, that's not going to necessarily rule out everything. One of the interesting things about trademarks is that you get rights when you start using it. So theoretically, you might have somebody who goes out there and who doesn't do a search and who doesn't make sure that their name's available, but they start using it anyway. It's possible that, you know, as long as there's nobody else who's you know, going to be confused or has a confusingly similar name, that they may actually get some rights in that name just by doing that. You know, and those types of uses may or may not show up in a Google search. They may not show up in a state name database search because maybe the person didn't go through the formal, you know, requirements of registering their name, whether it was a sole proprietor or something more formal like a corporation or LLC. If you go through the formal steps, those names will show up in this or should show up in the state databases. And I also mentioned the federal database. So the federal database is important because a federally registered trademark gives the owner exclusive rights throughout the United States. A particular business need not necessarily have a physical presence within a state or need not necessarily be actively marketing into that state to have protection in that state against competitors or other people who want to use confusingly similar names. So that's really like the apex. That's where you have to start in a federal trademark database. If you find results there, then, you know, you have to dig a little bit deeper and you have to look and see, you know, are the goods and services related? Are the customers related? Or, you know, are there similarities to the marks and the businesses that might cause confusion, right? If not, okay, so let's say you do a search for your name or your slogan and you don't find anything in the federal database. That's not the end of the search, right? I think it still makes sense to do a Google search, to do a state name, name database search. At that level, you may or may not want to check all 50 states. One thing about a lot of healthcare practices, although this too is changing, they're pretty much local businesses. They tend to be focused on a particular geographic region, and tend not to be national in scope. So, you know, in that regard, as long as your name is maybe clear at the state level, you know, you should be in pretty good shape. But the point of all this is to say that there's really a number of steps to go through to make sure that A, you've got a good name, a name that's protectable, but B, a name that's available, that somebody else isn't using not only the exact name, but somebody else isn't using a similar name that might make it hard for you to stick out in the market. And, you know, at the same time, make it hard for you to protect your brand against other competitors.
So the idea would be that just start with a name that you know no one else is using, because you know you run a risk, even if there's arguments to be made, that if somebody else is using the name, that you just have to kind of jump through some hoops or you know spend some money legally. But you could avoid that by spending the time and effort at the front end to say, hey, is this a really unique name? Now, I have a lot of clients who choose very generic names for their practices, but some of them try to do unique ones. And you know, they may not find anything in the same state, but you're right, especially in certain specialties, there may be another person using that very unique name in another state. So the question really then is, do we care that somebody's using this unique name in another state, even if it's the same kind of services? But more importantly, do they care, right? Because Isn't the decision really like, I think, oh, what's the big deal? You know, I'm here in Chicago, they're in Florida or Tennessee or California, whatever it is, why should they care the name I use, right? But we see a lot of expansion in practices. And one thing I want to mention is, even if they're geographically within a state, there's lots of presence online, social media, especially with like derm and aesthetic type practices, they're all over social media. So how does that impact, you know, whether somebody is really competing or not when we think about using names like social media wise?
Yeah, I think that is really the biggest risk that we have right now. And that's the fact that a lot of these businesses, especially as you mentioned, derms, and, you know, some other types of specialties really lean on social media very heavily. And social media really doesn't know any geographic boundary, right? It's a community of interest. So it's very likely that these marketing messages are going to appear on the same platforms, right? They're going to appear to the same users. And when you have a name that isn't easy to distinguish from somebody else, that can create problems. It can create problems for you because, you know, potentially you might be losing customers to somebody else. Like we have a client in common who spends heavily to market on social media. And, you know, even despite all that marketing, it still suffered an instance of confusion in their own backyard with another firm that had a very similar name, you know, and because the names were sounded similar and the products and services were so similar, people, you know, were getting confused online. And it's just, it's really where a lot of not just the marketing dollars are going, but I think it's where the consumers are. So really across specialties, I'm seeing a lot of my clients put that emphasis into social media, not just the marketing messages, but really the whole social media identity, right? It's not just what's in the timeline or what's being posted under the account, but it's the account itself and the name associated with the account, right? And the brand associated with it.
And
that.
I guess like people, you may think nobody from another state is going to even find out about me, but of course they will on social media. So it's not like it used to be where nobody even knew about practices with the same name. So just to clarify one point, it's not just that the names are identical, but does there also need to be confusion involved as well? So is the fact that there are two derm practices and they have very similar names in different states and they're both on social media, you know, if I happen to see both of them because I follow derm practices, that itself is not enough. It is the fact that I call one when I'm meaning to call the other, is that really what the issue is?
So yeah, I think those are two sides of the same coin. What the law protects, or what the law is designed to protect, is to protect against consumer confusion. So we don't even want that confusion to come up, because if the confusion comes up, then, you know, maybe there's already been some harm there. So, you know, the idea is to try and prevent that from happening. And, you know, on social media, it's very likely to occur if their names are not distinctive. And you, as a brand owner, can certainly look at what's going on out there and say, you know, are these other brands likely to cause confusion with my name? Maybe it hasn't happened yet, but could it happen, right? And that's really how the law looks at it. It's likelihood of confusion. You don't have to wait until somebody actually gets confused. You have the right, you know, assuming you have a protectable brand and brand name and trademark, you have the right to protect against that even happening. But, you know, again, with the social media and with, you know, the geographic diversity and, you know, people are on their phones and, you know, it's just, it's very easy for that confusion to happen, even when people don't intend to do that.
Right, that makes sense. So I guess the question is then, well, how do you make sure this doesn't happen to you, right? And I think that's what you're going to tell us next.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is what's known as trademark clearance or brand clearance, and that's making sure that you have the rights that you think you have in your trademark. So maybe this is a name that you have been using for years and nobody's really said anything or thought anything about it, but maybe you haven't gone through the trouble to register it as a state trademark or register it as a federal trademark. It's just been kind of hanging out there. So that's one thing, you know, look at how can you shore up your existing rights. Another thing to look at is, you know, if you're getting ready to launch, making sure that you really do that knockout search and that you're not going to even, you know, run the risk of creating a likelihood of confusion with somebody else, you know, sort of ready, aim, shoot, as opposed to ready, shoot, aim, and do that due diligence and that planning to make sure you can avoid it. And then, you know, at the same time, if it's a new mark, make sure that you're doing your state and your federal trademark registrations or whatever registrations are appropriate. And one of the benefits of federal trademark law, and there are many, not only is it sort of superior to state trademark law, right? So your rights under federal trademark law certainly will protect you in any state forum. and will actually supersede state rights. But you, under federal law, you can sort of plant your flag before you even start using your trademark. One of the nice things about the federal law is that it allows for intent to use applications. So for a company that's, you know, spent the time to do their clearance search, make sure that their trademark or their logo or their slogan is ready and available for them to use, they can file an application to protect that before they even go to market with it. So that's, you know, it's a great way to kind of get that process started and really solidify your marks, or, I'm sorry, your rights as you start to use it.
Right. So I know from some of the situations that you and I have worked on together that there are clients from time to time that do receive lawyer letters from other businesses out there that are claiming that, you know, our clients are using names to which they don't have a right, logos to which they don't have a right, et cetera. And maybe you could speak a little bit to that. And also, I think I can speak from experience in saying that it can often be a lot more expensive to defend or negotiate or settle that kind of claim than it is to kind of do that knockout search or get advice from the start. And I think that's a really important point that I want any clients that are listening to this podcast to hear. Spend the time and money finding out if you're going to have a problem, because it costs a lot more to deal with it if it does turn out to be a problem. And so maybe you could speak to, you know, what happens when you do hear from somebody that you're violating allegedly their rights.
Yes, absolutely. That is a really big issue. The first thing you do when you get any kind of cease and desist letter is really take it seriously. Take a look at what it says, you know, engage a lawyer or at least contact your business lawyer and say, hey, you know, is this something that I need to look into? Do I need to, you know, maybe hire, you know, some additional help to deal with this issue? When that letter comes to me, the first thing I do is I take a look at, okay, what are the rights at issue here? Is the person who is claiming to have the rights that they claim to have, is that a legitimate claim, right? Are they overstating their rights? You know, have they done everything that they need to do to protect their rights? Are they mistaken? Is it really my client that, you know, that they're concerned about? And has my client's conduct really like risen to the level that it could cause confusion with their rights? So I think there's a lot of due diligence to do just as a first step. And honestly, 90% of the time, doing that due diligence will give you a very good idea as to your strategy and, you know, in terms of how you want to respond. It's not always clear cut, but more often than not, you know, you can make the business case that, hey, I could spend a few $1,000s here to resolve this and move on, or I could spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to defend it. And, you know, it's not always an easy call, but trademark litigation is very, very expensive. And, you know, as you said, if a knockout search or a clearance search can help you avoid some of that, it's really money well spent. You know, and in terms of,
and rebranding can be really expensive too, right?
Rebranding can, but you know, you might look at, say, you know, it may cost me $10,000 to rebrand and everything else, but it might cost me $50,000 to, you know, defend the brand that I've just invested in. So, like I said, it's a business decision. You know, sometimes the merits are clear, sometimes the merits are not so clear. I mean, I will admit that there are nuances to trademark law, and it's not always easy to draw a bright line between where one person's rights are and where another person's rights are. And, you know, you often find yourself kind of in a gray area where maybe some of these rights overlap. And again, you know, you have to have sort of the sense to take the business decision and say what's, you know, what's really at stake and what's kind of the best path forward. But like I said, you know, don't sit on these things, take them seriously, you know, figure out how you're going to respond early on, because it will be, you know, critical to your, you know, the strategy going forward.
Right. That makes sense. So I guess, you know, there's a lot involved in choosing kind of the direction you want to go. And when you come up with a clever tagline or logo or whatever it is, what, you know, what other advice are we missing here that we haven't covered? I mean, we're talking about doing the knockout search. We're talking about not just relying on what you find on Google, making sure that you've taken the steps to file that trademark or do whatever else you need to do, and then responding if somebody accuses you of not having done the right thing. So what other steps should clients be thinking about to make sure they don't find themselves in the situation, and having it turn out badly?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's always more that you can do. You can do your own trademark monitoring. You can monitor, something as simple as like a Google alert or other online alert that'll let you know if keywords pop up. You can do more formal monitoring. You should always do your own sort of monitoring. You should be aware of what your competitors are up to. I've had clients, walk a trade show floor and take pictures of competitors' products, if they think that there's something, that's not okay about that. It happens. So, be aware, keep an eye out, make sure you keep an eye on things. There's also periodic renewals that are required. So don't let the renewals fall through the cracks, because, you hate to find yourself ready to go to court only to find out, your trademark had just lapsed a few months prior. I've seen it happen. So,
I think those are all great pieces of advice. Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you about, and I know we've worked on this together as well, is that we have a lot of clients who, they save money by maybe designing their website on their own or having a practice manager or a child or, not a grown child, is what I mean, designing their website for them. And, they will find free photos and images online and they use that on their website. It's not unusual at all. And a couple of times now we've had clients receive pretty serious cease and desist letters and demands for payment as a result of that. And I kind of want to bring this up as well, because I think, most physicians that I work with and dentists and other types of providers, they kind of think of intellectual property as all kind of falling into this one pool. And I think this is an important issue as well. Can you speak to that kind of situation and what you would recommend?
Yeah, this is an important issue, and it really makes sense. It does go hand in hand when we're talking about branding and marketing is very much content and advertising, and images are a very, very big part of that. And on the one hand, we have all this wonderful technology, cell phones, internet platforms, websites that allow us to sort of manipulate images very easily. It's easy to find them. It's easy to download them. It's easy to put them up on your website or in your social media feed. Unfortunately, just because something is easy to do doesn't mean you're always allowed to do it. And one of the biggest issues that we've seen are sort of this idea of using royalty-free images, because there are a lot of different websites out there that offer royalty-free or free-to-use images, but in fact, they are subject to additional terms and conditions that aren't always disclosed, and they're not always available when you're doing a search. You could pick the search engine of choice. You can do a search for a particular type of image that is royalty-free or, Creative Commons license, right? But it's very easy to use those images and violate the license or violate the copyright in those images. So you have to be very, very careful and always, just like, clearing trademarks, when you're using third-party images, you really need to make sure you know where you're getting them from and make sure that you're using them in the way that you're permitted to use them. So if that means different attributions or links or other things that you need to include when you use these third-party images, you need to absolutely make sure that you are including those. And really, do not be fooled by this, free to use or free image or royalty free, because it's very, very misleading. And unfortunately, under copyright law, if you were to violate one of these, even if you didn't intend to, even if it was just a total accident, you are still strictly liable. You are liable for potentially statutory damages or even actual damages that a plaintiff can prove that they suffered by virtue of this. So even if it was your best intent, and even if you thought you were following the law, a silly mistake could make you liable for copyright infringement. Right. And it's terribly unfair, but unfortunately, that's, the way the law is written.
Right. And unfortunately, also, there's some lawyers out there, and this is their entire business model. All they do is send out letters demanding payment for you having used the image inappropriately and or without attribution or whatever it is. And if you try and fight it, it ends up becoming a very expensive experience. And, I know we're seeing more and more of this happening. And I kind of wanted to mention out there, I don't think people, when they see free, they assume that they can use it. And it wouldn't just be social media websites, but if you're doing like a PowerPoint presentation, or just anything, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Any use of an image in a commercial context without authorization or without permission is a violation of the copyright. And you know, it doesn't, the copyright law does not require that money, you know, that there be an exchange of money or that you pay for something. You know, there's other forms of value in order to be able to, you know, use copyright. And if those, you know, if that value is not exchanged, then there is no license and it's copyright infringement.
It's just crazy. It's a whole business model, which is very frustrating, really.
It's really terrible.
Yeah,
it preys on the naive and it preys on the uninitiated. And the system is calculated to make it easy for law firms to shake down small businesses for, you know, what are not, you know, they're generally small amounts of money, you know, $1,500. I've seen as high as, you know, $7,500. It's not an insignificant sum, but, you know, you stack that against the hundreds of thousands of dollars it costs to defend a copyright lawsuit, and you're more likely to just agree to pay the shakedown fee than, you know, to defend yourself, even if you didn't do anything wrong.
Right. And the high volume of people with that mentality, you know, makes a living for someone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You only listen, you know, at the rate these things come in, you only need a couple dozen a year and you could be living quite comfortably.
All right. So let's think, what haven't we covered here? I guess one of the last things I might want to ask you here is, if somebody listening to our discussion today discovers that their logo, their name, their likeness, or something is being used by somebody else, what steps should they be taking?
Well, they should first investigate to make sure they've done everything to protect their own trademark. And if, you know, they think their rights are being infringed or abused or damaged in some way, then they should contact a lawyer and get, you know, get an opinion and find out if there is anything to do, what can be done. You know, litigation is not always the first step. Sometimes, you know, if you see one of these situations, you can reach out to the other side and say, hey, listen, you know what, we understand that you're using this trademark. You may not have known, but, you know, this is our trademark and we're afraid that you're going to cause consumer confusion and, you know, we'd like you to stop. You know, and sometimes people are reasonable business people and you can have a discussion at that point and, you know, maybe there are some concessions to be made, but oftentimes you can resolve those without litigation. Sometimes you get people who just, you know, don't, that, you know, they you know, maybe they take it personally. Or they feel that they can't back down once they've been given, you know, an ultimatum or something like that. So, you know, you have those situations as well. But, you know, first thing is to kind of investigate the situation, talk to your lawyer, figure out what rights you have and kind of what is the best step strategically. I mean, I've had people show up at trade shows literally with, you know, a competing product, you know, on the other side of the showroom floor. And, you know, in those types of situations, that's an emergency situation. So, you know, trademark law does allow for emergency relief, although, you know, more often than not, it's just, you know, a matter of conversations and letters and so forth.
All right, great. All right. So do we have any final piece of advice that you want to share on this topic that we haven't covered? Because I feel like we've covered a lot.
Yeah, we've covered a lot. Protect your IP early and often. You know, it's never too early to look at registering something or protecting something or talking to somebody about protecting it. So,
all right, great advice. Well, thank you, David Adler from the Adler Law Group, and I'm Erica Adler from Retzel and Andrus. We hope you enjoyed our podcast and you can join us next time at the Health Law Hotspot. You can also check out our other podcasts at ralaw.com. Thanks for joining us.
The Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.